Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me today. For this week's episode, I am joined by author Astraeus Amore discussing his new book, Psychedelic Sacred Sexuality. We had a nice conversation last month, and I'm happy to bring it to you on this week's podcast episode. But first, a few announcements before we get there. First off, I'd like to thank Nick, who has made another contribution in support of the Entheogenic Evolution podcast over this past week via PayPal. Nick stops by every once in a while and leaves a few bucks in support of the podcast. So thank you very much, Nick. Your ongoing support is always welcome whenever it arrives here on this end. Thank you very much. Also, want to thank and, of course, congratulate Philippe, who has joined as a new God Molecule level supporter over at my Patreon page at patreon.com/martinwball. At the God Molecule level, that gets Philippe a 1 hour monthly consultation with me via video call and also gets him a couple free gifts that are available exclusively to my current patrons over at my Patreon page. If you would like to support this podcast, which of course is always encouraged and welcome, you can stop by my personal webpage at martinball.net and use either the PayPal link or the Patreon link that are at the top right of that webpage, which I have currently updated recently. It's got my latest book up there, 5-MeO-DMT Integration, Embodying Non-Duality is Not What You Think, which the audiobook is now in production. I did start it over this past week, and I have the first few chapters done. Still, obviously, have a bit more to go, but I am well within my target of releasing, the audiobook this spring. So that'll be coming in not too long. And of course, the new album that I created in order to support the audiobook and will be included in those chapters is now available and should be out on all streaming services soon over at Spotify and YouTube Music and Apple Music and all those places. My new album is entitled When the Beauty is All That Remains, and it's also over at my Bandcamp page at martinball.bandcamp.com. Sorry, having a little trouble speaking this afternoon. And you can also find that at my personal webpage. It's both at the front page at martinball.net and, of course, on the music page with all of my many, many, many other albums. Also, here is just my weekly reminder that I am available for 30, 60, and 90-minute consultations via video call to help you integrate your entheogenic experience from a non-dual and energetic perspective. If you would like more information about my consultations, you can go to www.nondualentheogenicintegration.com or just shoot me an email at martinwball@gmail.com and I can get you on the schedule and we can have a conversation and talk about it and help you out. And let's see. Hope you have enjoyed the first few chapters from the Solandarian game, and perhaps you are reading along with the AI-imagined art illustrated version. Just another reminder there that it is available as an ebook at Kindle and the Apple Bookstore, and also as a full-color PDF over at my Patreon page. Again, is patreon.com/martinwball. You just go to the shop there, and I have PDFs in color format of I think 18 of my books, something like that, are over there. So if you want that and you want to read along, of course, I do have the first 5 chapters available for free. If you would like to receive that, just shoot me an email at martinwball@gmail.com, and I can let you know where you can download that. And we'll be back next week with probably the next 2 chapters from the Solandarian game. So hope you're enjoying that. Well, let's go ahead and get into this conversation with Astraeus Amore. His book, which we are discussing, is Psychedelic Sacred Sexuality, and he also has a website of the same name, psychedelicsacredsexuality.com. Hope you enjoy. Okay, well, I am welcoming on to the Entheogenic Evolution podcast author Astraeus Amore, which is not his real name, but that's the name that we're going to be using in the podcast today, and that is the pen name that he's using for his new book, which we're going to be talking about. The book is entitled Psychedelic Sacred Sexuality, Explorations to Ecstasy and Oneness with Your Lover. So welcome onto the podcast, Astraeus.
Thanks, Martin. It's great to be here, and I appreciate you inviting me on.
Yeah, so I think we've got a whole bunch of different things to talk about today. But if you don't mind, I would just like to ask, how'd you come up with the pen name?
You know, I wanted to do something different than something like Ananda. And I've always resonated with the Greeks. And I was just kind of researching what would be a good Greek name. And Astraeus, who is related to the god of wind and the four directions, really resonated with me. And then Amori, meaning love, also felt like a good way to tie that into a name on to a book title on psychedelic sacred sexuality. So it all fit well for me.
Yeah. So I wasn't familiar. So Astraeus, you say, is the god of wind?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Greek god of wind. And I believe the four directions as well. And he's in the pantheon of Greek gods and pretty well recognized, but not, you know, as big as Zeus and some of the other more well-known gods.
Yeah. I had never heard it. I assumed that it must have something to do with astro, as in like outer space or something like that. So I was thinking, oh, is it mean like cosmic love or something like that? But no, I'd never heard the name Astraeus before.
Yeah. It was nice to find it. And actually, you know, I was using AI to help find a bunch of different names, and that one just resonated with me. So.
Yeah. Well, it's a nice one. Double A, AA, and then you get listed at the top of the alphabetical listing, right?
That's true. I hadn't thought about that. Another bonus.
And so maybe just expanding on that a little bit. Of course, in writing, people have been using pen names for a long, 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 long time. There's nothing new about that. I mean, even going back into ancient texts, a lot of times a pen name was used. It was not people's actual names. And it gets used a lot these days, of course, in music. That's another place where people have, you know, a performer's name or something like that. But here in with the publishing of a book about psychedelic sacred sexuality, going off the assumption that the use of a pen name is more for your own protection of your own identity. So maybe if you could just tell us a little bit about the thinking behind that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the reason being is I am a functional medicine provider, and physicians have big targets on their back. So if we talk about things such as psychedelics, there's unfortunately a lot of conservative individuals that are out there that are, you know, kind of looking to take us down, unfortunately. It's a dark world that we exist in right now, and people, instead of coming together and trying to understand and love each other, they seem to be all about being divided and attacking one another. So one of the main primary goals of the book was to discuss how can we come together through love and oneness, and how can psychedelics help trend us within our own country, within the world, towards understanding and creating greater empathy and love towards one another. So while I'm always understanding, I think it's unfortunate that many others in our country are all about attacking each other and being victims and blaming others instead of accepting their own responsibility for their actions, right?
Yeah. It's a big part of our culture right now, and certainly the psychedelic world is not immune to that in any way, shape, or form. It's a big part of what's happening out there in psychedelics as well. So,
and even this, I just want to mention the door blowing off in your backyard, more or less, right? From the Boeing airplane recently, there's like 20 lawsuits going against Boeing for that. And granted, it wasn't a good thing to have happen, but nobody was injured. Nobody was hurt in that particular accident of the door malfunction. Yet everybody's like, oh, I'm entitled to X thousands of dollars because the wind messed up my hair or whatever, right? So that's the mentality. Let's just sue everybody instead of, you know, saying, hey, let's just make this right. Let's not allow this mistake to happen again.
Yeah. So before we get into the topic of psychedelics and sexuality, I was hoping maybe you could just tell us a little bit about your work as a doctor in functional medicine. And I thought it'd be a good opportunity just to describe what functional medicine is for anybody who might be unfamiliar with that term or what that would mean as a physician.
Yeah, great question, Martin. So functional medicine is the pursuit of the root cause of a disease or an illness. So, for example, if someone is suffering from pretty severe anxiety and they've had a history of multiple traumas in the past, then the root cause could be PTSD. And by seeking out that root cause and helping them release that trauma through a pathogenic molecule such as MDMA, then you may actually have a very effective treatment rather than basically blunting the problem, which would be what's been happening to veterans for decades, where they just put them on Prozac and other SSRIs, not allowing them to clear and open their heart chakras and let go of that shit that's been giving them the anxiety and the insomnia and the depression and everything else that's going around with it. Another example could be microbiome imbalance. So your gut is imbalanced, and that's creating an imbalance in terms of serotonin production, which can contribute to mood disorders. It can raise cortisol. It can create inflammation globally. It can even create cognitive impairment. So by addressing the microbiome through some tests where we look to see if the gut bacteria are balanced and you've got good bacteria and not too much bad bacteria, what we call dysbiosis, then we're able to get people in a functional state of balance, and then the other systems are functioning well and there's reduced inflammation. Much of what we do in functional medicine is looking for ways to enhance mitochondrial function and reduce inflammation, but then also address the mind-body connection in a very deep way. But what happens in regular allopathic or modern medicine is instead of putting out the fire, they're opening the window to let the smoke out. So they're not treating the underlying fire. They're just treating the symptoms. So it's really about going to the root cause, as mentioned.
So it sounds like from what you've already shared that you see a place for therapeutic use of entheogens within the realm of functional medicine, as the example that you gave was treating PTSD, perhaps with, say, an MDMA therapy session to relieve the root cause. So do you see that as a possible window for where psychedelics might find applicability within the standard medicine or functional medicine, I should say?
Absolutely. And yeah, thanks for bringing that up. And that's one of the reasons I'm a huge advocate of psychedelic medicine is it does address the root cause in many cases, particularly with MDMA. And I'm so happy that, you know, hopefully it's going to be available again this fall through the helps of MAPS and Rick Doblin and whatnot, although it's not the best situation where it's having to be invested through a commercial corporate pharmacy. At least it's going to be out there both in the underground as well as above ground. But yeah, I think MDMA is a prime example of treating the root cause. And I think many of the other psychedelics have some potential to work that angle as well. And ketamine, which I offer in my practice, actually has a fairly good impact on the element of PTSD, not as profound as MDMA. But ketamine can also help with depression and anxiety. So it can kind of hit a few different things at one time. And another cool thing that's happening is we're looking at the stimulation of brain-derived neurotropic factor with many of the psychedelics. So when we look at these crappy drugs like Aricept that are out there that are acetylcholinesterase inhibitors to treat Alzheimer's, we're not treating the underlying issue. Whereas if we do something like ketamine, psilocybin, LSD, et cetera, we're stimulating brain-derived neurotropic factor, helping with neural regeneration and treating the underlying root cause. So there's a new study happening right now looking at ketamine for the prevention of early Alzheimer's and actually even reversing early Alzheimer's. So it's always been a big concern of my older patients, you know, how can I help reduce my risk of Alzheimer's? And we're actually working on a newsletter that's going to talk about that exactly.
Interesting. Yeah. So it sounds like just from what you've described here, that this has been a longstanding interest of yours, though I could be wrong. So that was kind of my next question is, have you recently gotten into this topic after having pursued a long career in functional medicine and now looking at psychedelics, or has this kind of always been part of your interest and part of your wheelhouse? And say now with the publishing of this new book that you're kind of communicating more around that. But I'm just curious for yourself, because obviously I do talk to a lot of people who are doctors who are kind of just now, because there's been so many studies done, and of course with all the conferences and all the information that's out there now, that a lot more doctors are being open to ideas of psychedelic therapy. But I get the impression, and also having read your book, that you have perhaps a more longstanding interest in these topics.
Yeah, very longstanding. My functional medicine, integrative medicine interest goes way back to probably about 1998, maybe 99. And I actually taught integrative and functional medicine to family medicine residents. So I was passionate about that topic. And then it was probably maybe a few years later, 02, 03, that I really started studying shamanism with Don Oscar Mira Quesada with the Pachacuti Mesa tradition. So I became very interested in shamanism and thus, participated in ayahuasca, huachuma, and other ceremonies in Peru and whatnot. And through the deep dive with shamanic ceremony process, I've developed an interest in all psychedelics. Of course, did I do mushrooms when I was in college? Yes, all that too. But I would say, in terms of the more mindful, deep dive process of working with psychedelics, that's probably been ongoing for 20 years. So yeah, I'm not a newbie to this at all. And it's always been something that I've been diving into and experimenting with. And now, a lot of my psychedelic field work is looking around combinations with entheogens and pathogenics and whatnot. So I'm going much deeper looking at combinations of things like MDMA with 2CB and whatnot, just to really figure out the nuances of how deep can I really go with this.
Yeah. So you have ample personal experience, longstanding interest in it. So what inspired the idea of putting together a book specifically about psychedelics and sexual experience? That even it's interesting in the modern psychedelic movement that it still seems somewhat of a taboo subject in some ways, the discussion of sexuality and psychedelic experience.
It's very sad that it's taboo. And if we go back to the ages of Tantra and even pre-Tantra, when we look at the ancient temples, there's plenty of imagery carved into these ancient temples that are purely, sacred sexuality, deep levels of Tantra. And why did it suddenly become taboo? Is it related to the church controlling our perceptions on this? Is it society? Is it the unfortunate elements of the Me Too movement? I think it's kind of a combination of everything that's happened there. But I think that if we look at sacred sexuality and psychedelics in a way that is very conscious and respectful, and we have consent, and we're able to utilize it in a way that is looking at opportunities to connect us to oneness, to states of bliss, and to states of ecstasy, then it is something that I hope that everybody can experience. And I can't tell you how many times I've told my partner, oh my God, I just wish that everybody on this planet could experience this high state of ecstasy and oneness and merging that we do. How can I get this word out so that other people can experience this? Because you just can't go that deep with breath work and every other thing that you may want to combine in Tantra without the application of things like MDMA and psilocybin and 2CB. It just takes it not one notch, but at least four notches higher, in my opinion. And you probably feel that too, right, Martin?
Yeah, that's of course why I wanted to have you on the show, to be able to talk about this, because I don't think it's really talked about enough. And all the sociological studies at this point in time are saying the younger generations, they're actually not only suffering from social isolation, lack of friendships, lack of meaningful connections with other people, and suffering from high rates of depression and just loneliness. But also there's a lot less sexual activity that is taking place for people across all ages, also very importantly, including younger people who might be of childbearing age. So a lot of societies are now kind of suffering from people not engaging in sexual activity. And, you know, when we're talking about psychedelics and we're talking about all these benefits of reconnection and being in touch with yourself and being in touch with the oneness of, you know, the ultimate state of being, that this element of connection with each other through consensual sexuality, I think, is just such an important part of the conversation that just doesn't get talked about enough. That there's so many concerns around talking about sexuality, and a lot of the conversation around sexuality has also been highly politicized within our contemporary culture. So it becomes a subject that people just aren't comfortable with. And I think that it's worthwhile talking about, and especially you've already mentioned the roots of Tantra, that, you know, when we look back in ancient India from where Tantra originates, and as you mentioned, we can go and we can see the ancient temples, we can look at the ancient texts, and a lot of this got ritualized into different kinds of meditations and visualizations within Indian culture, Tibetan culture, where no actual sex was practiced. But when we go back to the roots of this stuff, they were using mind-altering substances, and they were engaging in sexual practices, actual sexual practices. And as you say, and I know these days a lot of people are into breath work, and people like to claim, oh, I can go just as deep with breath work. And my response to that is generally, yeah, I think you're full of shit. Like, yeah, I don't buy it.
Yeah.
I don't buy it at all. Because psychedelics are more than that. And when we combine it with someone that we are intimate with, someone that we are sharing our hearts with, I mean, it just takes us to levels that, I'm sorry, you don't get there without these elements. And so I think that it's an underexplored area of the modern psychedelic renaissance that I think that we need to have more conversations. Of course, you know, with the caveat that we're talking about consensual relationships with people. And
absolutely. And I think, you know, unfortunately, some people are going to be triggered by the idea of psychedelics and sacred sexuality because maybe they were taken advantage of, unfortunately, in that set and set in. And I think in my book, I emphasize, you know, chapter one and the disclaimer, et cetera, that you absolutely have to have consent of your partner. You need to have done psychedelics for at least 6 months on your own before you engage, in my opinion, and, you know, intimate relationship while using psychedelics. And I think if you follow that basic guideline, you're going to keep yourself out of trouble. But it's when people are at a big party and they're all doing MDMA together and things get out of control that these unfortunate incidents can occur. So it's be smart, plan, get consent, re-consent if you need to, have a sign that you say, hey, you're going too far, let's stop here, that kind of thing. And then I think we can all move forward in a place of love and respect and travel to these beautiful places. And I'm just saddened by, you know, what you're sharing in regards to the loneliness that's out there. I've definitely read a lot about that, how our teens and 20s year old individuals are completely disconnected. They're more about just looking at their phone all day rather than actually having a face-to-face conversation like we are. And when it comes to being intimate, they're afraid because of all these horror stories they hear and everything else that surrounds the whole societal anxiety around sexuality.
Yeah.
So, I think
just in agreement with what you're saying there, I think it is really important to make a distinction between consensual sacred sexuality with someone that you are consenting with, that you've had conversations around, that you are intentionally exploring this avenue together, versus, you know, people being taken advantage of or people being given something without their consent and then somebody abusing them, that we're talking about something different. And still today, They're probably, I would imagine that most of my listeners have probably heard the terms of sacred sexuality and might have some understanding of what that is. But still, there are people out there who definitely have the idea that sex is base, it's animalistic, that's something that traps you in material form, and that's not sacred. That, you know, there's these ideas of the sacred should be something pure, something that is not carnal, something that does not involve the body in various ways. And that's a trajectory within Western culture for a long, long time. So this idea of sacred sexuality is still kind of transgressive for a lot of people. And so you do have a short section in your book where you do talk a little bit about the roots of Hindu Tantra, Buddhist Tantra. You even mentioned Jain Tantra, which is almost completely unknown by most people, I would imagine. And then also you make the distinction of Neo Tantra and or modern Tantra or Western Tantra. So I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about maybe even your own introduction to Western Tantra, which is ultimately is very different from Buddhist and Hindu Tantra. So this is kind of a little sort of a bit of a conversation that I had with your assistant who contacted me and, you know, said, well, I do have my PhD in religious studies. I'm familiar with these traditional forms. But maybe tell us a little bit about what Western Tantra is. Like, we've already discussed that I'm here in Ashland, Oregon. There's a lot of people here in Ashland who are into sacred sexuality and modern Tantra, but it's different than Buddhist and Hindu Tantra. So maybe share your own interest in how that developed for you.
Right. Most of it was reading many of the texts that are available. Also doing an online course. I think it was with ISTA. And then, you know, while I haven't done any of the live courses, I've definitely done a ton of field work with my partner in terms of tantric massage, energy work, sound healing is a big part. I love to work with Tibetan bowls and crystal bowls, you know, all sorts of other elements of partner yoga, which I talk about in the book. And I could have someone in kind of a downward dog and chiming the large Tibetan root chakra bowl to kind of activate some of the energies there. So my form of modern tantra is definitely it's modern or neo-tantra and incorporating sound healing, incorporating, you know, the psychedelics and being more in a intuitive flow with it all. And what I've found is that if we get in our mind while we're trying to flow into this state of oneness and intimacy with our partners, that then we're taken out of the whole experience. So the beautiful thing about working with MDMA is it naturally flows. So many of these positions that I found that are tantric, many of these positions that I found that are partner yoga naturally occurred without looking in a book. And it was just because we were wanting to connect our root chakras together in one way or another, whether it was interlocking our legs and feeling our perineums together or doing sound healing on our root chakras together. So I think that we can read these things, but really what it's about is the individual finding their own path and finding what works for them as a couple rather than getting in this head game of this is what I need to do. I need to start with the breath. I need to start with eye gazing, whatever. It's like, no, just do what feels right and natural to you. Read some of the conceptual, philosophical, spiritual ideas between, you know, Western Tibetan, Hindu Tantra, etc., but use it just as a mind-expanding opportunity to give yourself some ideas to play with, right?
Yeah.
So that's where I go with it.
Yeah, and if I could sort of encapsulate what you're saying there is that it's not so much about following the forms or following the right ideas or the right guide, but really paying attention to how is energy presenting within this exchange and interaction here, and how can we follow that energy in a way that is authentic, that is heightening that sense of connection, heightening that sense of pleasure, and then using that as a route to these deeper states of experience rather than using deprivation or pain or suffering or struggle to try and gain a deeper spiritual experience. But this is actually going through the body, through pleasure, and through a deep connection with another person and sort of intuitively following that.
Exactly. And what I found is that MDMA, LSD, 2CB have been my guides. And for example, Saturday night, I was with Bella and we decided to do the MDMA with psilocybin, and we dropped in with just 150 milligrams, a pretty good dose, actually 175 total. But we started just in a yab-yum position where she's kind of got her legs around, you know, my hips, and we had our third eyes connecting, and we were just simply holding each other, breathing, some gentle kisses. We had yoga mats on the floor with a nice comforter. We then went into tantric massage. I think, you know, some beautiful oral sex for a while. And then, you know, having intercourse wasn't a thing until we were maybe 4 hours into it. And we started at four. And my God, we didn't finish until midnight. So we were like, oh my God, feels like it was just 2 hours. But you kind of go into this timeless space with your partner, and it's the most beautiful thing. And you're not worrying about what the fuck you're doing. You're just in flow with it, just feeling from your heart where you need to go next. And I think so many people are all about doing the act, doing this, doing that, you know, like these stepwise checklist bullshit things, right? It's like, no, let go of all those preconceived notions and just be in flow with your lover. And so what I found is that MDMA in particular has really taught me how to be in flow while I'm on it, but it's also taught me while I'm not working with these medications to be in better flow, because it's kind of opened up my heart and created this neural rewiring in a way to where I know where to go more intuitively. So I think it's a powerful teacher, probably more powerful than somebody going to, you know, 10 years of tantra classes just by working with LSD or MDMA. Crazy as it sounds, right?
No, I'm in agreement with you that, because, you know, people go to these tantra classes and these medicines, they're not in use within these classes. And so, as you say, there is a lot of time spent on, okay, now that we're hand-holding or we're eye-gazing, you know, and doing the exercises. And usually it does get mapped out as like, these are the exercises and we've got to do the exercises, versus, again, this is more of looking at where is energy flowing? How do I flow with it? And kind of tapping into that more direct, intuitive sense of knowing that, and I certainly find with my wife, with my partner, that when we are in touch with each other, that's when intimate connection is just the most beautiful and the most energetic, that it's, there's no plan, right? That it's not coming from a plan. It's not coming from a blueprint. It's coming from, we are allowing each other to feel each other, to be enmeshed in each other's energy fields, and then moving from that place and really paying attention to how each of us is responding in the moment and using that as the guide. And then taking that sense out into the world about how am I moving through the world? How am I interacting with the world? Coming from that more intuitive flowing place, that energetic presence, or coming from a plan, coming from a sense of X, Y, and Z, this is what I got to do, you know? So it opens up that world in just, it's such a beautiful way, I think.
That's exactly it. And that's what I've learned, you know, particularly I'd say over the last 5 years as I've dived much deeper with it. And if you've read Stealing Fire by Jamie Wheel, he talks about being in flow states. So what I think is, yeah, we want to be in flow state with our partners and our wives. And by doing so, we can then travel to states of ecstasy and oneness. But if we're on a checklist, objective, you know, spread list, a spreadsheet, it's not going to happen, because we're too into our conscious mind. We're not going into that primal deep state of knowingness and intuition. So yeah, I definitely encourage everybody listening to be in flow and not to worry about it. Just have fun with it.
Yeah. So living a life of practicing this is very different than writing a book about it. So what inspired the idea of, you know what, I'm going to write a book on this topic. I'm going to share, and not only write a book about it, but I mean, let's be clear. This is not a book for kids to read. This is definitely, this is graphic, not in an overly, you know, over the top way, but you know, that you are, very exposing of yourself, of your own experiences in describing different sexual acts and practices. And that's something to share. So what convinced you that you wanted to put this all into a book and not only communicate what is the benefits of this approach, this psychedelic approach to sex, but also include your own personal experiences and stories?
Yeah, again, I just want, I'm a very altruistic individual, and I really, truly wanted to share the love with the world. And I wanted people to be able to experience these states of ecstasy. And I feel this element of, oh my God, I just want everybody to feel this deep level of love. And I am, you know, observing just all this hatred and darkness around me. How can I shift the consciousness of our country, of the world? How can I shift us to a greater level of awakening through sacred sexuality? And I know we can awaken through meditation, connecting to nature, going to these retreats and whatnot, but oh my God, we can awaken so much deeper by combining the elements of the divine masculine, divine feminine, and spiraling those energies, those kundalini energies, into a deep and powerful way that I feel can be radiated out in a way that shifts the energy of the whole planet. I really think that it's a lost art that needs to be rebirthed or remembered. It's all in us. And because of technology, because of social media, because of the human nature, we've lost that. We look at some of our ancient civilizations, you know, particularly, you know, like the Egyptians, even like pre-Egyptian, if we look at like ancient Peru and Corral, they all honored the divine feminine and the divine masculine. And all of that has been lost. And now we're into, you know, all these weird things with pronouns and whatnot. Not that I'm against pronouns, but I think it almost creates another level of stressors and division if we don't use the correct pronouns. So it's like, let go of that stuff. Let's just all come together and be understanding and try to find that deeper level of love for each other through psychedelics, or at least through sacred sexuality. And if we combine those two things together, it's just turbocharged.
Well, it certainly is. You know, one of the things that I like to say about psychedelics that I think also is often missing in the modern discourse around psychedelics, because, you know, there's a lot of focus on healing, overcoming trauma, you know, and these, of course, have great value. But what we're also kind of missing within the mix is that taking psychedelics actually can also be a lot of fun, that you don't need to have trauma or something to fix in order to enjoy the benefits of psychedelics. And again, when we're working with our partners, psychedelic sex is actually a lot of fun, and it's kind of mind-blowing and amazing, and you will reach levels of experience that you really can't get on your own, because it comes from that intermingling of energies and that co-participation that is happening there. So I think that it's something that really is of value. And again, it's also fun, which is why some people are like, no, we want to make everything serious and everything's got to be solving a problem or something like that, you know, yeah. or treating someone for something. But again, if we look at the sociological data, that people are actually really kind of divorced from their sexuality these days, and that this has been a long-standing problem in Western cultures. And, you know, you mentioned ancient Egypt and whatnot. Like, we go back to ancient Greece and ancient Rome, and we see all kinds of pornography that was produced as art forms, right? Mm-hmm. So they were more in touch with their sexuality than the Christian culture that supplanted them, which then became sex is only for procreation, right? And really limiting. And it's only sacred if it's done in marriage and it's done for procreation, but it's not something necessarily for enjoyment, for that fundamental aspect of being a human being. As human beings, we are sexual beings.
Right. And I think so much of what we need to do is return to some of our primal natures. And I often talk about rewilding ourselves, in other words, reconnecting to nature and getting out in the trees and earthing and hugging those beautiful redwoods that are just down the road from you. Yeah. Those are just primal things that we're missing. When we're stuck underneath fluorescent lights and we're just in a shopping mall and we're just looking at our phone, we lose that primal connection to nature. So the beauty of doing psychedelics in nature is it just makes you love those trees much more. When I was at the Redwood National Park, not far from you, I was near Crescent City, I think, in that particular area, one of the state parks, Prairie something. Anyway, I asked the ranger, I was like, well, how long is this hike? And I'm with my girlfriend, and you know, she's like, it's an hour and a half. And it took me 4 hours to complete it because I was stopping at every tree and just appreciating the beauty and, you know, looking at the mushrooms on the floor and the slugs, you know, those banana slugs that are everywhere.
Banana slugs.
I mean, it just takes it to a new level. Just like it takes sex to a new level. It just makes you more aware, whether it's the higher definition that you get from mushrooms that allow you to see the bark and the ferns better, the tactile senses, the smell, the wind, the light, everything. So when you're with your lover, you feel so much more in terms of touch. And if your lover is giving you a massage, it just feels 10 times better. You have a bowl of fruit and the strawberries and the blueberries taste like the best ones you've ever tasted in the world. The smells of aromatherapy are just on, you know, 10 times greater too. So I think there's just so much that can be amplified through psychedelics that it's sad that people haven't experienced. So a lot of it was just, I want people to experience this love. I want them to experience the bliss, the oneness, the sensory inputs. And, you know, it took me 3 years to write this book. I was very afraid of writing it because of its topic. Took a lot of boldness for me to put it out there, but I feel good about it. And I hope that even if only 10 people read it, you know, that it changes their lives. That's what matters. So it's great. I also wanted to say that psychedelics help people do the inward work. So a lot of times we have all these therapists that are like, trauma this, trauma that, you're a victim of this, you're a victim of that. Mm-hmm. Well, sure. Yeah, it does occur. But you know what? If you do the inward work and we let go of that shit and we move on, then hopefully you won't need a trauma therapist for the next 10 years and you won't be in this dark place of feeling a victim. So I totally understand trauma, but I think we've put so much emphasis on it that it's holding people back from moving forward and being in a place of happiness. So I encourage everybody to use psychedelics as an opportunity to help clear those traumas while also doing their therapy, and they'll accelerate the process quite a bit more.
Yeah, and I like the emphasis that we don't necessarily need to attend to our trauma for the rest of our lives. You know, if you attend to it, if you heal from it, now go out and live. Now,
right. I visualize it like a thorn in your ass, right? And it's like, okay, do you want to like feel that thorn in your ass for the rest of your life? Or do you want to pull that fucking thing out of there and say, you know what? I'm done with that. I'm moving on. Done my breath work. I've done my psychedelics. I've let go. I've forgiven that person. And I'm going to, you know, do this and that to be focused on the future and moving forward rather than looking back and suffering for the rest of their life. And as a functional medicine doc, I'll tell you, if you live in the past, you live in your traumas, you're going to raise your cortisol levels. You're going to accelerate your aging. You're going to shrink your brain. You're going to raise your glucose. You're going to create opportunities for chronic disease rather than healing. So, you know, take the bull by the horns and wrestle it to the ground, get rid of that trauma and move on. Right. That's my recommendation to people.
Yeah.
And I know some people are not going to resonate with that. But I think over time, if they can just take steps to move in that direction of letting go of traumas in a more profound, proactive way, with the consideration of psychedelics, and I think they'll be happier and healthier moving forward.
Yeah, and that having pleasurable experiences, having fun experiences, having these really deeply charged experiences can actually create a much healthier and balanced life. You know, we don't want to deprive ourselves of the pleasures of being human. Yeah, there's lots of suffering that comes with being human. There's lots of problems, lots of things we can try and fix. But there's also a lot of pleasure and enjoyment in being a human. And the act of sexual expression with another consenting person is probably right there at the top of what we can experience in these embodied forms and using them in ways that bring great pleasure, great ecstasy and enjoyment, and deepens the connection of love and appreciation for those who are our partners.
Absolutely. And, you know, we were talking a little bit about, you know, the pleasure of psychedelics and sexuality. And I will say that, you know, the orgasms are much more intense and pleasurable and ecstatic than what you would experience without psychedelics. For example, this weekend, as mentioned, I was doing the MDMA with the psilocybin, and towards the end, we were having amazing intercourse. But because MDMA can block your response to have an ejaculation in guys, particularly when you've done a high dose like I have, it can be like you're in this state of continuous orgasm and never releasing. But what I have found in my field work is that if my partner will stimulate my G-spot, which is my prostate gland, with her finger while doing oral sex, I will have the most mind-blowing orgasm that is 10 times more intense than what I would in a normal sexual release, just, you know, through penile. So I think that there's these opportunities that people can experience if they're willing to go in that direction of more creativity that can intensify the orgasm, particularly if it's being, you know, more difficult as a result of the serotonergic blockade of the orgasmic response that, you know, we see with everything from Prozac to MDMA, et cetera. LSD doesn't do that, but MDMA and MDA are definitely, you know, can slow that ability to release.
Yeah, which is interesting because they also really, out of all these different potential psychedelics, they're the ones that really work the best in terms of sensual contact, and that you know, it fits the mode very, very well. But it's interesting that it can interrupt the orgasm response. But sometimes it's so pleasurable anyway. It's like, well, even this is better than an orgasm on, you know, in just in a straight state of mind. Yeah.
Right. So it just prolongs the beautiful ecstatic state, and you're able to just be with each other. And then, you know, when you're finally able to release towards the end of it, as the medicine's wearing off, it's just nuclear in terms of where you go. So it's all worth it in the end, right?
Yeah. You know, the way that I tend to think of both MDMA and MDA is that for men in particular, it kind of opens the potential for them to have a sexual experience that, at least from my masculine body and perspective, seems to be more in alignment with what women are more capable of. You know, because men go through a period of excitement, then they ejaculate, and then they're done. Right.
Yeah.
But when we're working with MDMA or MDA, you have these very, very prolonged periods of very, very heightened sexual pleasure, you know, where women can naturally have multiple orgasms, or they can sustain that for a much longer period of time than most men can. So that by working with these molecules, we're actually opening up that possibility of kind of understanding the sexual experience more from that feminine perspective. At least that's my take on it. But do you have any opinions on that, or what would you say?
Yeah. I totally agree. We're able to flow in there. And then I would say, you know, for guys that are afraid of prostate stimulation with their lovers, I would say you're totally missing out, because the analogous G-spot that women have, which gives them a much, much more intense orgasm compared to a clitoral orgasm, the guy's prostate, if your partner can just kind of do a circular motion on it, you know, over a period of 10 minutes or so, you will have the most profound release, you know, on or off psychedelics compared to the usual just penile stimulation. So definitely be creative and don't be afraid of trying that. From a multi-orgasmic standpoint, I would say my favorite has been LSD. I'm not bragging, but I've definitely had nights where I've had 6 orgasms on LSD, and you know, probably could have gone more. It just has this freakish ability to allow guys to keep coming and coming. So then that gives you an opportunity to experience what some women are able to do, you know, which could be 6 to 10 yeah. to 20 orgasms in a night. So you're like, oh my God, I wish I could have that pleasure without LSD. So that's good. And then I think, you know, I talk a little bit about, you know, there's no shame in using sex toys to, you know, enhance things a little bit too, the sound healing, et cetera. I mean, why not, you know, why not be like Dr. Ruth and have fun with it all, and don't be constrained, as long as you're being safe together and playful, right?
Yeah. So I'm not at all surprised that MDMA has come up a number of times already in our conversation. LSD, you've mentioned psilocybin mushrooms. I was a little curious, you know, in reading through the book, and right now I have the table of contents up on my computer, and you also do have sections about San Pedro and peyote, cannabis. I mean, that's almost like, of course. I mean, if you're not using cannabis in your sexual activity, like you're just missing out. It's really easy. Go ahead, add that one in. But then ayahuasca, that's one that really kind of like, interesting. And if I'm correct, I mean, you have personal stories in some of these chapters, but correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think there's one in the ayahuasca section, but that was just sort of a curious one. And also ketamine. Hadn't really heard of people using that in conjunction with sexual activity, but you know, there's all kinds of potentials, because they are all amplifying and expressing our energetic natures in somewhat different ways, and so there's different ways of connecting with sensuality. But I'm curious about some of these other ones, especially again like San Pedro, peyote, and ayahuasca, because there we are getting the potential where there might be some quote unquote getting well happening, which most people don't consider sexy. And like for me, ayahuasca, I never really purged that much on ayahuasca, just a couple times out of the many, many, many times I drank ayahuasca. But for me, it was more the other end that was the primary issue. It's like, oh, it's time to go sit on the toilet because, you know, there's some cosmic clearing going to take place here. So with these other ones, I'm kind of curious how you would approach those with sexual experience.
Yeah. So ayahuasca, I definitely put in there that I wouldn't have sex with ayahuasca. I see it as more of a personal growth, inward work molecule, or plant medicine is the better word for it, that enables us to be better partners and lovers and to be more present for them. So I see that as an opportunity where, you know, you or I could go down to Peru and do a series of ceremonies and then come back and be more present for our wife or our partners. And I feel that because of its sacred nature, that Grandmother Aya would not be real happy with the idea of people, you know, doing sacred sexuality. But maybe I'm wrong. That's just my, you know, take on it. San Pedro, I discuss, and yes, I have had amazing intimate times with San Pedro, which is in that mescaline family. And I feel that it can be held in a sacred sexual context, but with respect and in a mindful, sacred way with your partner. It can be quite the heart opener as well, and can stimulate some amazing, amazing flow. It is a long acting one, like LSD, about 14 hours. So
yeah,
you have to plan and do that a little bit earlier. And then peyote, again, I feel that one's in that sacred category like ayahuasca, and I would say only in circle to use it for personal growth to make you a better lover as a result of that inward work. And then one of my other favorites that I mentioned in there, but I haven't really had a lot of discussion on sacred sexual flow, but I may do it in a sequel book, is 2CB. 2CB is a very difficult compound to find. I've definitely been challenged to obtain it myself, but it is one of my favorites, particularly to combine with the MDMA. And I will do a low dose of MDMA, just 50 to 100 milligrams with 20 milligrams of 2CB. And I would say, they call that the nexus. I would say that is the most, by far, intense experience I've ever had in terms of heart opening, oneness, and just, you know, wanting to merge with my lover. And I mean, it's so intense. I'm like, you know, wanting to eat them. You're like biting my partner's butt and, you know, put her whole breast in my mouth, that kind of stuff. You're just like, oh my God, I just want all of you. You know, it's great. She loves it. Right. But it's just like the most uncontrollable, deep love that you could ever imagine doing 2CB with MDMA. And I think if you do the MDMA first, wait about an hour to 2 hours, and then do 10 to 20 of the 2CB, it's by far the most amazing experience on the planet thus far.
Yeah, my experience with 2CB, it was just a solo journey for me. And I think that it's the only time I've ever had the 2CB. A local friend of mine had, oh, here, I've got one for you. So I know you've been wanting to try it. So I got to try the 2CB, but I was all on my own. But man, when that thing came on, that was the most overtly erotic psychedelic experience just within the context of the psychedelic itself. I mean, so I'm lying there with my eyes closed and it just got so sexy. I mean, I am definitely attracted to the female form, and it was just all kinds of curves and bulges, and it was like, whoa, and just like overwhelming as it was coming on. And it was so erotic. And
You definitely gotta do it with your wife, and definitely do a little bit of MDMA, and you'll see what I'm talking about. It's just beyond so good. And I think MDMA with LSD is a close second. Definitely a longer journey. The nice thing about 2CB is about 4 to 6 hours, but LSD is 12 to 14 to 16 or so.
But if you've got all day and nothing else to do,
why not?
Nothing wrong with just really enjoying yourself for a good long time.
Oh, for sure. I think that, you know, as people kind of go through the early entry point of psychedelics, starting with something like mushrooms, and then, going into a little bit of a THC blend, like with the indica. I talk about a combination called the Alchemy Blend, which is indica, sativa, and CBN, which creates a little bit more psychedelic flow and definitely a lot more sacred sexual flow too. And then maybe moving on to the MDMA, et cetera, kind of doing it in a stepwise fashion, then they can work themselves into these higher and higher levels of flow and not be overwhelmed with the whole process.
Yeah. And, you know, just mentioning cannabis again, that there used to be a product available here in Oregon, which apparently can't be found anymore, but it is actually a cannabis lube. It was specifically designed for women. That it would be absorbed through the sexual organs. And my wife was quite fond of that. But then it was no longer available. I don't know where it went, but, I just thought that was a great product, and, you know, it was definitely for her, and she really enjoyed it very much. And, you know, that cannabis, you know, for people who are kind of like, oh man, I don't know about taking psychedelics and having sexual experience, that I would encourage, well, try working with cannabis first if you're a little bit timid of these more intense, longer acting, more traditionally psychedelic substances. But starting with cannabis, that many people find that touch is just more sensitive, you know, that you feel more. And even for people who might be a little bit shut down sexually, that cannabis does provide a nice window and opening. And even in reference to, you know, the history of all this, let's always keep in mind that Shiva's favorite plant is cannabis. And what is the god Shiva like to do? Well, he likes to meditate, he likes to dance, and he likes to have sex for long, long periods of time. You know, so these things have been going together for a long, long time. And, you know, even in Indian culture, a lot of this has been suppressed, I think.
Yeah, it has. And we just celebrated Shivaratri on Friday, right? Which is the merging of Shiva and Parvati, the divine masculine and the divine feminine. So, I think they were so on to, you know, the sacred sexuality thousands of years ago. And again, it's been lost. What I found... I had discussed with Daniel McQueen, who runs the Center for Medicinal Mindfulness up here in Boulder, different combination. He's like, Fred, yeah, try the combination of indica, sativa, and CBN, and you'll be blown away. And he likes to smoke it. But what I found with my partner is if we use the rapid release edibles, the gummies, there's a company called Wana in Colorado that is a really nice one. That you get a longer, like 2-3 hour duration, and you're not having to stop and, you know, smoke a vape or flower and interrupt your flow. So you just do like 5 milligrams of each, and you are just perfectly in there. Now, some people may want to start with 2 milligrams of each, but you know, depending on how frequent you use it, you need to kind of figure out the dose that works well. But what I found is my partner is much more multi-orgasmic. It takes like minimal stimulation and she is coming left and right. For me, it doesn't make me nearly as multi-orgasmic as LSD, but for whatever reason, for women, at least my opinion, it's been more stimulatory for them. So yeah, for gals that are wanting to be more sensitive and more multi-orgasmic, I think the THC blend is where to go.
Yeah. And since you mentioned Daniel McQueen, I'll just put out there for the listening audience, remind them that I do have an interview with Daniel from, I think it was probably last year. It's still up on the podcast. So you can go back if this is piquing your interest, if you missed that interview with Daniel McQueen, that it's still up on the podcast and you can go find that.
Yeah. He's a great guy. Got a great practice. And he's definitely done a lot of work just trying to figure out the alchemies of different products that will, you know, achieve that psychedelic state and help you be in sacred sexual flow. Right. And I discuss all that dosing in the book. And the other cool thing I have in the book is I worked with Ben Malcolm, also known as the spirit pharmacist. He's living in Costa Rica now, to put in these tables to talk about what are the pharmacologic actions of various psychedelics, what are the drug interactions, what are the feelings that you'll sense with it, what's the legality. And of course, all of us, you know, we haven't talked about it, but yeah, everybody really needs to be paying attention to legality and be safe with that element of it, of course, in terms of where you live, state regulations, etc. But having that intersection of science and spirituality in a book is rare often, so I've done all I can to put that balance in there for the reader.
Yeah. And it's nice that you involved Ben with that. He's another one who's been on the podcast. I don't think that my interview with him is still up because that was a few years ago that we did that. But he also is a great resource for anybody who's concerned about, I'm on this medication, but I want to take this psychedelic. What are the dangers or potentials? That you want to contact Ben Malcolm, the spirit pharmacist, and he will help you out.
Yeah, he's a true expert on that. And I've made so many, recommendations of him to different individuals because, yeah, he can go into that deep dive if you're on different psychotropics and worried about the interactions before you go down to Costa Rica or Peru to do your ayahuasca. You know, how can I taper off this and how can I still feel okay while I'm down there?
Yeah, that sometimes people send me messages saying, hey, I'm on this, but I want to work with 5-MeO-DMT. That's what I'm most known for, is my work with 5. And I always come back and say, that's a question for Ben. That's not a question for me. I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not going to answer your medical questions about your prescriptions.
Yeah.
So in putting together the book, how did you decide what the overall flow of the book would be? And as you discussed, that with some of the medicines that you mentioned in here, that you're not necessarily recommending them for sexual experience, but more for personal growth and inner work. But it seems like, if I'm remembering correctly, I read the book just a couple weeks ago, that it kind of starts more with the sexual practices, and then maybe it gets into some of these other ones that aren't necessarily recommended for sexual experience. How did you decide to break it down into the chapters that you did and have the overall arc of the book be what it is?
Yeah, well, I even talk a little bit in the initial chapter about how I became interested in Tantra. I've done a lot of volunteer work in Nepal, and was down at the temples in Bhaktapur, south of Kathmandu, seeing all this tantric art. So a lot of my travels have kind of made me more aware of how sacred sexuality is okay, whereas in the United States, we cancel culture everything, right? So part of it was travel, being open-minded. And then in terms of picking out the molecules, it was, obviously starting with psilocybin, because that's the easiest entry point for people to get into psychedelics. It's cheap. You can grow it, decriminalized in some states. And then sharing the deep stories, erotic stories that I've experienced with my lover going there. I think a lot of it was just being in flow with what I felt should be on the list, and sharing the deep stories and fun locations, whether it was Mount Shasta near you, where I've had some amazing experiences over the years, whether it was other exotic places like Tabacón down in Costa Rica, on working with LSD and the hot springs, all these settings with psychedelics can really amplify the experience. And I wanted to bring that element in, connecting with nature while at the same time connecting with your lover and amplifying that experience with psychedelics. And then you can feel the elements of my shamanic experiences in Peru with ayahuasca and what I've experienced with that, with San Pedro and peyote as I share it. And I think, I do the best to share the experience and the wisdom. And then I just want, to open people's minds to trying it themselves, because everybody's going to have their own unique experience with it. I think they'll have some similarities, but the downloads they may get, the entheogenic, the empathogenic experience is going to vary from person to person just based on their genetic makeup and the partner they're with, et cetera.
Yeah. And to help people get into this, here's where we can shift gears a little bit. You do have some illustrations. You do have some photographs. And as you know, something I wanted to talk to you a little bit about was the use of AI-generated images within the book. So you kind of have all these elements where there are drawings, photographs, and the AI imagery as well. So let's just talk about how you chose to go about illustrating the book and where these different elements come in.
Yeah. So, some popped up on my screen here. I'm a photographer like you are, and, I wanted to share some pictures like of medicine wheels, of the beautiful Mount Shasta in there, et cetera, because I wanted to maintain my anonymity. I don't have pictures of myself or my lover in there, but I did, have sketches made, and I just had them, modify it a bit, make myself look a little more buff, right? by an artist that was in Czechoslovakia, or no, Poland, actually, Iwa. And then I love working with Midjourney and Dali, and was just really having fun creating like the images of Shiva and Parvati, and creating these images of heart opening, et cetera, that I think would have been difficult to sketch out, but through the magic of putting the right prompts in with AI, you can use that as another adjunct to adding a lot of great content to your book. And I think in my case, I wanted more of a blend rather than all AI. And I feel it worked out well. How did you feel about the way I kind of interspersed AI with the sketches and some of my own photos? Did that feel pretty good?
Yeah, it did. And the AI images, of course, they look great. The one thing when I'm looking at the PDF is my thought was, well, this really should be in color, at least for the PDF, you know, because I want to see the colors in these images. But they definitely look really good. And I think the black and white sketches, I think that they work really well. And then, of course, you do have some of your own photography in here. So I think that it all works well together. And I mean, I really enjoyed my project of creating the illustrated version of my novel, where I worked with exclusively with Midjourney. And one of the things I wanted to ask you was, did you come up against the explicit content warning? Because sometimes, so there is psychedelic sexuality that happens in my book, The Solandarian Game. There are things that Midjourney would not let me illustrate, right? It's like, nope. And then sometimes I would have it, there are various times where my characters are naked. So I'm trying to create a naked image. And then there were even times where, you know, I found that if I scrolled the picture down, it would produce a naked image. But if you actually asked for that, it would say, no, explicit content warning. These are our community standards or something like that. So it's,
yeah. I've run into that more and more. It seems like the censorship is going up, you know, week by week in terms of that. Because we were doing a newsletter from my office and something else. We were like, generate a picture of a couple kissing, holding a heart. Yeah, I think it was a Valentine's thing, you know. And I said, sorry, we can't create an image of somebody kissing. I'm like, oh my God, what is going on? But then I put in an image of somebody holding an AR-15 and it would do it. So again, this shows you how effed up our culture is. It's okay to have a weapon of mass destruction in your hand, but don't be talking about kissing and showing a couple kissing. That's taboo, dude, you know? I found that total hypocrisy of, you know, it's okay to promote violence, but not okay to promote love and oneness and compassion. So just that whole algorithm that's being generated by ChatGPT and DALL-E and Midjourney is really kind of annoying me. I did want to mention I'll have to send you the ebook because it does have all the color images in there. So people download the ebook, it's all color, except for the sketches, of course. I think that it's sad that, you know, we can't create some kind of rated R image. Of course, you know, we don't need the rated X to be generated by AI, but I think it's okay to show beautiful breasts and whatnot. Maybe to show detail on a genitalia is over the top. And I'm cool with that.
Yeah, but it does seem a little bit too restrictive. I mean, I understand where the potential is with, you know, like with the face swap, where you could take a real person. And so that's part of the protection, is that we don't want to create an image of a naked person and then do the face swap from a real person onto that, because then, you know, we've got a deep fake porn image. But given that naked bodies are a fundamental part of art in and of itself, that just having these blatant restrictions that you can't produce an image that potentially shows a body part, you know, even in an artful way, I do think is somewhat of a limitation with these programs. And I even found that there were times where I would get an image from Midjourney and then I'd download that because I wanted to use that in the illustrated version of the book. But then I wanted to use that same image as a reference for an additional image, and I would try re-uploading that image. And sometimes it would say, this violates our content policy. And I was like, but Midjourney made this image.
I know. Well, and take, for example, you go to any major museum in the U.S., they're going to have a Renoir that has a, you know, breasted, beautiful woman in there, right? You know, are we going to take down all the Renoirs because they've got breasts in there, or Titians, you know, some of the Italian masters? Are we going to go to the Louvre in Paris and take down the Venus de Milo? I mean, what the fuck, you know? This whole cancel culture thing is bullshit. We need to appreciate the beauty of the human body, whether it's the Statue of David by Leonardo da Vinci or the Venus de Milo or Renoir, and not demonize it. And I think it's just extremely unfortunate that happens. I mean, for God's sake, go to the Vatican, look in the Sistine Chapel. You're going to see some nakedness there too. So I don't understand where all this is coming from and how it's being translated into AI. Is this not okay? So I would hope that if these people are listening in the AI world, they'll understand our concerns in terms of their censorship around that. But yeah, we don't want hardcore porn, but we want to be able to see the beautiful elements of the human body in a respectful way.
Yeah. Yeah. And that there's room for that, I think, in AI. Yeah. I mean, it's all very new. So everybody's still trying to figure out, you know, what are the parameters of this? But, I really do like the images that you came up with for the book, and I think that they work really well. I think it's a good example of how AI can be used as an adornment to a larger creative project that you have done here with the book. And I think that the images work very well with the text and what you have. And, you know, as I mentioned to you in creating my own books, I like to include images in there that I think that I always like to look at. If I'm producing a book, I kind of look at it as an art project in and of itself, even if it's a nonfiction book. Like this is a work of art that I want art to grace it. And I had a lot of fun working with Midjourney, but definitely came up against limitations within it. And yeah, I like the images that you have here. I'm just looking at the ones of Shiva right now. They look great. And yeah, there's Parvati. And then we've got the Yab Yum. That was the one that really surprised me. Like, wow, how'd you get it to make that? Because I see a rather full breast and a nipple. Maybe
I know. I'll bet if I did it now, it wouldn't create it.
I don't think it would.
Back, so I think I got lucky on that one.
Yeah. That I don't think you'd be able to do that now, that it would say, no, this violates our community standards.
Yeah. Well, I had a window of opportunity before they put those guardrails on the sexual just right.
But did you have any of the weird stuff where it's producing people with too many arms or too many fingers or an extra leg here or there?
The time it drove me crazy. Yeah. An extra finger of the foot being all sideways and off alignment. Yeah. Hopefully they'll fix that issue at some point.
Yeah. Well, it's like the AI, what it makes clear is that the AI doesn't know in a sense what it's making, right? That it's just going for an approximation. So it doesn't know that people don't have three arms or don't have seven fingers. It doesn't have that knowledge. It's not working from a knowledge base. It's just working on, can I produce an image that fits the parameters of what was entered here?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure it'll be refined and improved in the next year or two, but
yeah,
let's have to have them improve their algorithms or whatever to make it with five fingers and five toes.
Right. Like
alien being.
Yeah. This is what a human being looks like.
Yeah. And all the sketches I put in the book, my partner and I just modeled, and, you know, I had my iPhone just on a tripod with a remote control, and I'd snap the pics and I'd send them off to Eva to have her sketch them all for me, which worked out perfectly.
Oh, well, that's great. Yeah. So we've got tantric massage there. Oh, there's the fruits. Oh yeah. Yummy bedside treats. yeah. So I think the images really work well within the book and help complement it nicely. Go ahead, right ahead.
Right. Running out of time, but yeah, I do have a lot on, you know, how can you alchemize the set and setting, you know, in terms of creating that perfect bedroom atmosphere and, you know, the aromatherapy, all those kinds of fun things. So I think there's an element of preparation that people can do. And again, you can have all these cool things in your room, but you just want to be in flow with it and just have them available should you decide you want to, do tantric massage, should you decide, hey, I want some fruit, it's all there. and you're not being distracted by, oh, I got to go to the fridge and get this, or, oh, I got to go find this toy of mine that's in another closet somewhere. You just want to have it handy and ready for deployment, right?
Right, right.
So, yeah, I had a fun time doing that. I even joked about, yeah, you know, you could have like a craftsman toolkit, you know, where you could just pull out everything that you want.
Let's see what's in my toolkit here. Yeah.
Yeah. And I even, you know, I think it's cool talking about bondage, you know, from a very respectful, consenting way. And, you know, whether I'm being tied up or she's being tied up, I think there's a deep element of vulnerability that can enhance a relationship with your lover when you're willing to go to that extent, particularly while you're on psychedelics. So I talk about that in the book as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of great subjects in there. So thank you very much for your time today, Astraeus. And let's just remind the audience that we're talking about your new book, Psychedelic Sacred Sexuality, Explorations to Ecstasy and Oneness with Your Lover. And it looks like there is a website, psychedelicsacredsexuality.com, if people want to find out more there.
You got it. Well, thanks so much, Martin. Have a great rest of the day. And let's do another one sometime if you're gained.
All right. Sounds good. Have a psychedelic, sexy evening.
Cool. Do you too. And all right, everybody thanks. Listening, please do.
Yes, please do.